All right, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph by the new Perek. Here the Gemara in Baba Batra shifts. Until now we were dealing with issues of acquisition and establishing your rights to the property or whether you did or did not acquire the property. Over here, starting in this Perek and for the subsequent Prakim, there are other things that come up in the Prakim, but the main theme is determining when you purchase something, what is included in that purchase. So you use words that we'll see in a second in our Mishnah that are general words. Once you've used that general word or expression in the transaction, what's included or subsumed under those words? And therefore the Prakim here lay it out. So if you have Mocheret HaBayit, then we're going to have a Mocheret HaSfina, and then a Mocheret HaPeirot. So it's going through different types of property that one would have. And given that property, what are the nature or default situations in those transactions? So the Mishnah begins, Amocheret HaBayit, one who sells a house, Lo Machar Yitziah, he did not sell the Yitziah with it, Ve'af al-pi shehi p'tucha v'tocho, even though the Yitziah opens up into the house, not only does it open up into the house, it seems to be that that is the sole access to the Yitziah through the house. Despite that fact, when he sells the house, he does not include the Yitziah in it. The Gemara's first question will be, what is a Yitziah? So we have to determine what that is. Again, we've seen it a little bit already, but the Gemara will go into it more. And not a room that is inside of it. Here's major machloket in terms of what this cheder is. What is this room that we're speaking about? The Rashbam here on the Mishnah says, the kaven dein tashmisho kashel bayit, since its utility is different than the house, she'ein asui ela chatzniya sham chefetzav, it's only to store articles there, lishmor. It's a storage room. It's a pantry of sorts that is attached to the house. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. If you look all the way at the bottom of the Rabbeinu Gershom on the Amud, the Rabbeinu Gershom says it's cheder bifnei atzmo. It's its own room. V'lav tashmish bayitu. It doesn't have the same utility as the house. Ela lishon bo o latzniya bo chafetzav. So it's only to sleep in or to store things in. So the Rabbeinu Gershom adds in an additional utility is that you could sleep in there and you could have storage in there, but that's its only utility. It's not an active room in the house. The Rashbam over here suggests that it is a storage area, period. There is no sleeping in there. There's no utility similar to the house. There are others who suggest that the cheder here is an independent structure that is near the house. It's not necessarily attached to the house. It's not necessarily opening into the house, but simply that it is a structure on the property that's right next to the house. So it's a sub-room to the house in the sense that the house is the main building here, and it is a secondary type of building on the property, but it's not directly attached, but it is separate. Nimimenu then would mean that it is further into the property, that it's beyond the house and the property. So it's behind the house, or it's in the property, meaning that it still looks like it belongs clearly to this house. For instance, if you had a garage that was an independent standing garage, that would be seen lifnimi, and it's beyond the house, but it's still not attached directly to the house. Do you consider that to be part and parcel of the house, or is it a separate unit? So what we're saying so far is that the yitziah and this cheder are all separate entities, and therefore if you sell the house, you don't necessarily sell these items along with it. V'lo agit hagag, you also do not sell the roof. Bizman sheyesh lo ma'akeh, if it has a fence around it, gvoa asarat tfachim, that is a minimum of 10 tfachim high. The ma'akeh you need both from the perspective of the doraita requirement that you're not allowed to have a roof that is not encompassed, not fenced in, because of the dangers associated with that, as well as the fact that it makes it that you can utilize the roof. Obviously, we're speaking about here is a flat roof, where they had utility or there was utilization of the roof. So if the roof is considered to be something significant in and of itself, then when you sell the house, you don't necessarily sell the utility or the usage of the roof. And again, here, it might even be if the only access to the roof, as we'll see in a second, is through the house. But it doesn't mean that you sold that utility. What makes it significant is the fact that you have walls around it, which means that you have intended use for it. You only put up walls there if people are going to be on the roof, as well as the fact that people are utilizing the roof. And so 10 tefachim high makes it into an area of significance. If it has some sort of entranceway to it, even if it's not 10 tefachim high, enu machur, it's not sold. Either it means that there is an entrance from the house to the roof, that there's some sort of doorway or structure that allows you to get in, or this could mean that it has a wall on three sides and a doorway on the fourth side, but the doorway can replace the wall because a doorway is indicative, again, of access or unique access to this area. And because of that, you would not have sold it when you sold the house because it's significant in and of itself. So what the Mishnah is saying is that the word bayit really only includes the house, literally the house that's there. Anything that's ancillary to the house is not necessarily subsumed under the term bayit, as long as these other locations have either separate utility or they have a significance in and of themselves. And given that, they would be separate from the house and would not be sold along with the house when you sell the house to the individual. Not necessarily. The Rashbam goes out of his way to say that's not the case. That's even when you can only access it through the house, it still would not be sold with the house. It says even though the drisa tam labayit, even though that you would have to then retain access rights through the house, that you wouldn't have sold it along with the house. And obviously, in their day, things were different. So now the Gemara asks the first question, by yitziyah. What exactly is this yitziyah over here? Hacha targimu, this is how they translated it, afto, is an afto. So that actually was on yesterday's daf. We did it 2 days ago, but it was the top of Samach and Aleph. The Gemara over there also asked the same question about what is this idea of my aliyah? What is the aliyah that you are segregating within the house and it's not considered to be a problem for the Bnei Achatzer? So there the Gemara says, well, the aliyah is an aftai. Many of the Rishonim connect between the two. And therefore say that the afta that we're referring to over here is similar to the aliyah that we're referring to back on Samach and Aleph. And that is all the different manifestations that we spoke about in terms of afta, which is either that it's an attic, it's a separate level, or it's a loft that someone put in, or it's a tall house where the person subdivided the house and created an upper level within the confines of the original house. Those would all be explanations that accord with what we said in Aftai before. The Rashbam over here can see says, Afta binyan namuch, etel habayit mitzido machurav. It's a low standing building that is either behind or adjacent to the house. So he sees it as not being a regular cheder, but rather some sort of low building or low structure that is attached to the house. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, Afta the hocha havi aliyah. Here it is a proper aliyah, proper upper level, unlike what we saw in the previous parak where it was internal to the house and it was a loft or something of that sort. So even though he uses the afta to mean something similar, which is a building on top, nevertheless, he says it's different. Over there, it means a building within the house itself, whereas over here, it means a building or structure above the house itself. So that's the afta. That's one opinion. Rav Yosef Amar, bidka chalila. It is a bidka chalila. The word chalila can be used to mean different things, and therefore you're going to get different expressions within the Rishonim as to what bidka chalila is. The word chalila could either mean chalul, means hollow. Chalila could also mean chalila, like circle or around, or it can to surround or to be empty together, and that's what the Rashbam does with it. The Rashbam says that the bidka chalila is a sunroom. It says, kamin afta samuch the bayit. It is a structure that is near the house, a low structure. La sui chalonot chalonot lenoi. It's got windows all around it. V'hainu lashon chalila. Hashem shekutalav chalul kol zviveha. He uses both definitions of the word. The walls are hollow because there are windows there instead of wall. And it goes all the way around. Chayni rabbeinai, that's what I think it is. He's basically saying that it's the equivalent of a sunroom. There are others that say that the bidka chalila is a hollow area within the wall of the house itself. That they had carved out within the wall itself a structure, an area where you could store things in the hollowness of the wall. On the other hand, you look at their Beinu Gershom, he says that a bidka chalila is hu prozdor shosim bifnei abayit. It is an entranceway to the house, a hallway, foyer going into the house. That's what he calls a bidka chalila. And others suggest that it is a structure, a low structure that surrounds the house. Again, that's using the word chalila to be around. That it's some sort of structure, building, or low area that goes around the outside of the house. So those are all different possible explanations of the bidka chalila. The reason to explain it is because the Gemara is going to draw a distinction between it and the cheder and the Mishnah. And you'd have to explain that distinction based on what you think this is over here. The Gemara says, the man d'amar afta lo mizdavna, the one who says that the afta doesn't go with the house, kol shekein bidka chalila, then certainly the bidka chalila would not be sold along with the house, because as the Rashbam says, ein tashmisho domeh l'tashmisho shel bayit klal. It has nothing to do with the utilization of the house. I mean that at least, according to the Rashbam, the afta is an extension of the house. It's a low building that sits outside. Or for the Rabbeinu Gershom, it's an aliyah. It's a second level that is there. On the other hand, the bidka chalila does not have the same utility. It's not used like the house. According to the Rashbam, it's an area that you go into either to cool off or to enjoy the outdoors a little bit. You have windows all around it to get some sunlight or to cool off. And according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, its significance is the fact that it opens up to the chatzer. It has an independent access to the chatzer, because it is the foyer, the entranceway into the house. You use it just as an entranceway. It's not utility like the utility of the house. It's simply an access room or way to get into the house. Again, so that's different than the house itself. And for those that say that it is a hollowness in the wall, then again, that's different than a building or a structure that you would go into. Even if you say the room or the building next to it is a storage area, still the storage within the wall is different than storage in a separate room. A room has the ability to walk into it, to access it. But here, what you're doing inside the wall, it's a different utility than the house. So therefore, it's not sold. Aman amar bidka chalila, the one who says that it's a bidka chalila of afta mizdavna. But he would think that an afta is sold with the house because its utility is closer to the utility of the house. Tanei Rav Yosef. So over here we go almost on a sidebar here. Shalosh Shemot Yeshlo. There are three different names for this. Yitziyah, Tzela, Ta. These words are all synonymous with each other. The question of what Rav Yosef is doing over here, you could explain it, which is that the Gemara is trying to explain to you what the Yitziyah is that I mentioned before. Here it's giving you an indication by bringing Psukim to explain what the Yitziyah is. For the Rashbam, that's a little difficult because the Yitziyah that's mentioned here in the Psukim is not similar to the Yitziyah that he describes. And therefore, the interpretation here would be that the Gemara is just telling you what the word Yitziyah means in the Pasuk. It's not telling us what the Yitziyah means here in the Mishnah. It's simply telling you what is the Yitziyah in the Navi, or what is the Tzela that is found in the Navi. So all of these are synonymous, and through that you would understand what they are, which is the Yitziyah, Tzela, and Ta. But those both point that out because Rabbi Yosef himself has a different definition of Yitziyah above. So it's clear here that Rabbi Yosef, in the description of the Psukim, or the word Yitziyah in the Psukim, is differentiating that from the Yitziyah that is found in the Mishnah. If you think that Yitziyah is similar to what we're going to describe here in the Psukim, then what the Gemara is doing is telling you what the Yitziyah is by comparing it to other items that are similar, the Tzela and the Ta. Yitziyah dichtiv, Yitziyah that's used in the Pasuk, is from Melachim Aleph, in the description of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, Yitziyah tachtonah chamesh amah rochba, that the lowest rung has 5 amot in width. What they are describing here is that the building of the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kodoshim is the building called the Heichal. The Heichal is built with walls around it. The walls around it are not the end of the Heichal, but rather there's a secondary set of walls that go around the internal walls of the Heichal. Between those outer walls and inner walls are chambers that exist between the walls. And the hollowness between that outer wall and the inner wall, there are chambers. Those chambers are known as Yitziyot. The Yitziyot are built on 3 levels. There are 3 levels of these Yitziyot. And a question of how you access them or how you get up to them. But what is being described here is Yitziyah Tachtona, the lowest of those. The lowest of them is 5 amot. And that's because of the way that they built the walls. If you at all go into the old city, you could see this, especially by the Kotel, in the area that's in the tunnel areas that when you walk underneath, the car part that's covered, but you can even see it outside, that before they cleared away and made the plaza there, that there were houses that were built up all the way against the Kotel. So if you want to put cross beams for a house, you need something that supports them on both sides. If you're using the Kotel as one of your walls, how do you have the cross beams be held up by the Kotel? So what you can see in the Kotel are carved into the Kotel itself. You can see grooves that are carved in which they inserted the boards or the beams across, and that was how they rested them on the wall there. So in the Beit HaMikdash, they did not want to do that. They did not want to insert them into the wall. And therefore, what they ended up doing was making the wall in such a manner that it's staircased up. which is that at the bottom, it's obviously the widest. As it rose, they would go in an amah and then continue the wall up. And then the third time, they'd go in an amah and keep the wall going up. What that does is creates a shelf in the wall when you go in an amah, when you allow your stair stepping up. When you move in an amah, it leaves a shelf. On that, you put the base or the roof of the one below or the base of the next level above it. It's stair stepping internally on both sides. What you do then is you can run the beams, you can sit the beams on that insertion. It's resting on it, not inserting it into the wall, but it's just resting on top of the lower wall. What that does is causes that each chamber is an amah wider than the chamber below it. So what it says here is the yitziyah tachtona is 5 amot. So if you're stair stepping, it rises, then they move out. So that now widens the space by an amah, but creates a shelf. Then you go up again, and then it goes out again, another amah, and then continues to rise. So the wall is getting narrower. The stair stepping is inside, internally, between the two walls. They're each stair stepping. That allows you to place the boards down for the next level. So that means that the base ta was 5 amot wide. The next ta was 6 amot wide. And then the top ta is going to be 7 amot wide because the ta'im are widening as the wall is narrowing. Because the wall is narrowing towards the outside and there's a stair stepping on the inside. So that's why you have the yitziyah, tachtuna, is chamesh amarachba. It's 5 amot, the next level will be 6 amot. Alright, tzela, dichtiv, ve'etzlaot, tzela el tzela, shalosh ushloshim pe'amim. So here, this is the description of the Beit HaShlishi in Yechezkel. Over there, it's really not clear what they're speaking about, because the word tzela or tzlaot can mean on the side, adjacent. So what the Gemara is saying over here, the word tzlaot or tzela is similar to the word yitziah, and therefore what's being described here in Yechezkel are those same type of chambers that go around. But tzlaot, tzela, tzela, shalosh, shalom, pa'amim. That goes 33 times that you have these rooms or these tzlaot that go around, these chambers that go around. The way that the Bali Tosafot point out in it, it says, Uchtiba haikra, the Pasuk says, V'yu achazim b'kirot habayit. It also continues in that Pasuk to say, Lo achazim b'kirot habayit. They were not held into the wall. That's what I was describing to you before. Unlike what they did by the Kotel, where they carved into the wall to put the beams into the wall. Over here, they're not uchazim in the kirah. They don't take up the wall. They shifted the wall in order to create a space on which to lay the beams over the next level. They don't have them inserted into the wall. And in the Pasuk of Yitziah that is found in Melachim, it says, Levilti achoz bikirot abayit. So he says that is a good hint to the fact that they're speaking about the same item or the same chamber, because both psukim have the terminology of lo ayu achozim bikirot abayit that is found in them. Given that it has that same terminology, the Gemara seems them to be synonymous, and therefore it says the Yitziah and Etzela here are the same thing. Ta dichtiv, again in Yechezkel the word ta is used, vata kane echad orech, v'kane echad rochav. It says that the ta itself was one kane long and one kane wide. The Rashbam explains to you over here that a kane is shesh amot, is 6 amah, uben ha'taim chamesh amot. And between the ta'im, there were 5 amot. So now you have again a description of a chamber that is 6 by 6 amot. If you see here in the Bali HaTosafot, he says, "Batash sheish b'tichona airi." That's the middle level. Remember that the bottom chambers were 5 amot. The next ones up were 6 amot. And the ones above were 7. So all he says is that why is the other one 5 and this one 6? It's not because they were different words or different chambers. They're just on different levels. The lowest level is 5, the middle level is 6. Yeah. So even though the ta and the yitziah, or the ta and the tzela are synonymous, you're getting a different measurement because of the fact of where it is. Is it the bottom one? Is it the middle one? Or is it the top one? Although in the end, he does suggest, possibly, be'od yesh tefereish, to be'bayit sheni, hayta yitziah tachtona sheish, be'achaluk mi'bayit rishon. Says there is a possibility that in the second Beit HaMikdash, the lowest level was 6 amot, and not the middle level. And that is that the size of Bayit Sheni was different than that of Bayit Rishon. And similarly with the Bayit Yechezkel, you could still say that the bottom chamber was 6 amot, because who says that they're exactly the same size as the Bayit Rishon? They will climb and expand as they go up, but how do you know what exactly is the bottom or the base ta? So that's all he's suggesting over here. The Gemara, in the end, equates these three items, ta, yitziah, and tzela. If you see the word yitziah over here to mean, and afta, or bid chalila, which is talking about a room or a chamber, then the Gemara here makes sense. Those Rishonim that explain it that way are influenced by the fact that the Gemara equates it, Yitziah, Ta, and Selah. On the other hand, if you believe that the word Yitziah over here has some other meaning, like the Rashbam does, then what you have to suggest over here is that what all the Gemara is doing is explaining to you what the word Yitziah means in the Pasuk, just like it explained to you what the word Yitziah means in the Mishnah. And the two do not have to be the same thing. We find that many times, that Divrei Torah Lachud, Divrei Chachamim Lachud, that the Chachamim are speaking him in the colloquial spoken language at the time, and the words there can mean something different than they mean in the Torah. And for that reason, they're explaining to you the word Yitziah here in the Mishnah, in contrast to the word Yitziah that is found in the Psukim. Then the Gemara adds on over here, V'baitema, and some say Mehocha, that this is how you know it, Kotel Aichal Shesh, that the width of the wall was 6, Vata Shesh, and the chamber was 6, Kotel Ata Chamesh, and then the wall of the Ta was Chamesh. This is a Mishnah in Midot. The Mishnah in Midot enumerates the dimensions of the Eichal in two different ways. One from east to west, and it also does it from north to south. So in its enumeration from west to east, then here is the description. It starts outside the Eichal. It says the width of the wall of the Eichal on the western side was 6 amot. Then you had the chamber. Inside of that wall you had a chamber that was 6 amot. And then the chamber's wall was 5 amot. And then on the other side of that chamber, the 5 amot is the Kodesh HaKodeshim. But it's describing you the building, what I mentioned to you before, which is that the Eichal consists of two walls. There's an outer wall and an inner wall. Between them are found these chambers. And then the inner wall is, inside of that, is the Kodesh HaKodeshim and the Kodesh. When you're coming from the western side, which is the Kodesh HaKodeshim side, the wall that's the outer wall is 6 amot thick. Again, we're talking about very, very thick walls because it's 100 amot tall. It's supporting a tremendous structure. Then you have a 6 amot empty space, which are where the chambers are. And then you have the internal wall, which is 5 amot thick. So that's here again where the Baal Yad Tosafot say that we're talking about the middle level chamber. Otherwise it should have been 5 amot, not 6 amot. And then it gives the alternate answer, which is who says the second Beit HaMikdash was exactly the same size as the first. Maybe this is even the bottom, Ta, but it's 6 amot wide. Here the Baal Yad Tosafot asks a question, which is in other places in the Gemara, we just had it in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the Gemara says when you bring me Psukim and then afterwards you bring me another proof, why would you bring me another proof whose efficacy might be more questionable than that of the Psukim? Why isn't your best proof from a Pasuk? Why would you say, V'ibaitema, I have a Mishnah? Why is a Mishnah a better proof than a Pasuk? So, the Baal Yad Tosafot suggests over here that the Gemara only asks that question when the way that it's stipulated is Va'od. I have another proof. Va'od seems to indicate that I'm adding something, that the next thing is an additive statement, and therefore I have to say why it distinguishes it from the previous proofs that it brought. Over here, since it doesn't say Va'od, it just says V'ibaitema, it's just offering you additional information. The additional information is that over here in the Mishnah, it's more explicit that the Ta that is being mentioned there is a chamber, because of the way that it's enumerating the spacing there, it's clear what the Ta is there, versus the Psukim, where we're trying to intuit what it is that the Ta is. So that might be the reason that it brings a Mishnah, even though it already brought a Pasuk to support that. But we know from the Mishnah Midot exactly what a Ta is. A Ta is a chamber that sits between those two walls. Okay. Amar Zutra, Behu Dave Arba Amot. So here he qualifies the whole statement here that when you sell the bayit, you don't sell the yitziah with it. He qualifies that and says that it has to have 4 amot. The Rashbam over here says it has to be 4x4. Others say it just has to be 4 wide. Obviously the arba amot are coming to give it significance in and of itself. A space is only considered to be a significant space or have its own utility when it's 4x4 amot. Anything less than that would be considered to be a secondary or tertiary to whatever it's attached to, not independent. In order for it to gain independence, it has to have significance. 4x4 amot gives it that significance. Amar le Ravina the Marzutra, the Didachta Marta Davi Abar Amot, according to you, it says it has to be a minimum of 4x4 amot. Elemata Gabe Bur. What are you going to do with the upcoming Mishnah that says about a cistern? Tatnan, Loeta Bur, Veloeta Dot. When you sell the house, you do not sell along with it the cistern that is found there. The dot is also a cistern. The difference between them is a bor is made out of the natural bedrock or is dug into the ground, whereas a dot is built up with bricks around it or stones around it. It is a structure that is built into the ground, whereas a bor is dug into the ground, excavated into the ground. Even though he says, when I sell you the house, I'm selling you everything above it and everything below it, nevertheless, he still does not include the bor and the dot, even with that language that says you get the rights, the airspace rights, and you get the land rights below it, it still doesn't include the cistern. Hachanami idav arbamot in ilolo. He says, well, you're going to make that same qualification that you made in our Mishnah, that only if the cistern is 4x4 amot, will you be considered to be a separate space. If not, then it goes along with the house, because that's almost impossible. Most borot, or these dots, are not going to have a 4x4 space. So almost by definition, they're not 4x4 amot, yet you're saying in the Mishnah upcoming that they don't get sold with the house. Why is that the case, based on your qualification? Because hachi ashta. How can you compare the cases? When it comes to the bor and the dot, it's very clear that your utility is completely separate from the house, or different than the house. They are used for a magar, to store water. They are not used like the house is used. They are clearly different than the house. Nobody makes a mistake that a cistern is equivalent to a house, or would say that the utility of the cistern is the same as the house. On the other hand, hocha idividi chada tashmishtahi. Over here, both of them have the same utility, which is, as we saw before, it's not exactly alike, but it's much more common or similar. So, idav idal ramot chashiv, ilo lo chashiv. So therefore, if you have the four amot, it's significant. If you don't have the four amot, it's not significant. And therefore, you have to distinguish it in a different way. The yitziyah is not by itself or inherently distinguished. It's distinguished because it has slightly different utility than the house, but it also has a significant space. It's arba by arba amot. That's what gives it its independent significance. Then the born dot, by definition, have independent significance because they are different than the house, completely different. You could have a born adult independent of a house, or their utility is completely separate from that of the house. So given that, over there you don't need this qualification of 4x4 amot, or 4 amot. Over here, by the Yitziyah, you do need this qualification of the 4 amot, according to Marzutra. Now the Mishnah moves on to the next part of the Mishnah, which is lo techeder shelifnim meimenu. And not a room that is inside. Mar says, hashta Yitziyah lo mizdavin. Here you don't sell the Yitziyah, which has the similar utility to the house. Cheder mibay. You have to tell me that the cheder doesn't go. So that's why I said to you before, you have to distinguish between the cheder and the Yitziyah. That whatever the cheder is, its utility is different than that of the Yitziyah, which is different than that of the house. So the Yitziyah has something much more similar or in common with the house. The cheder has something that's different than the Yitziyah and even more different than the house. And that's what we saw before for the Rishbam. That's going to be that the cheder that we're speaking about here is only used for storage versus the Yitziyah, which was where human beings went. People went in there, whether that was it was a sunroom or whether the fact that it was a small building next to it, but it was something that people accessed and walked into and utilized in that manner, as opposed to the cheder, which is completely for storage. On the other hand, the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explained it was that the afta was an aliyah, was an upper chamber, or it was the foyer entering into the house. But it's still something that is used by the people going into the house. On the other hand, he said that the cheder was a place that you either stored things or slept in. That's its only two purposes. You didn't walk around in there. You didn't utilize it like you would actively in the house. Therefore, it was distinguished, the cheder, from the yitziyah. According to those that say that the cheder is a room or structure, then clearly, then if the yitziyah that's attached to the house is not going along with the house, then certainly this structure that stands independently from the house, that's not going with the house. So however you explain whatever the yitziyah and the cheder is, you have to make this distinction, which is that it's obvious if you don't sell the yitziyah, then certainly you're not going to sell the cheder that's there. So that's what the Gemara is asking. Why do you have to enumerate the cheder? It would be obvious once you say the yitziyah doesn't go, certainly the cheder doesn't go. It says, lo tzricha, you do need it. Da'af agav de metzalei matzrei avrai. Even though he delineated the outer boundaries, kidei Rav Nachman, like Rav Nachman says, da'amar Rav Nachman amar Ravua, hamucher bayit lechaveiro bebira gedola. Someone who sells a house within a larger question, whatever bira is, we'll see in 1 second. Afa bishem metzalo mitzarim achitzonim. Even though he delineates the outer boundaries, mitzarim hirchibo. He's explaining the boundaries, he's not giving you the area that he is selling. So let me explain this. The way that the Rishbam explains the word birak dola is, Bayit gadol hu, ubtuchim lo batim misvivotav. So it is a shared space between a large number of houses. So a large number of houses that surround this building or this structure, and they all open up into this structure. Whether this structure has common space where they dined or they did things together, or whether this common space simply was a hallway that connected all the houses. But the Birag Dola is describing the structure that joins all the other houses that surround it together. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it is, the Birag Dola is Palterin, which is like a mansion, a huge palace. So it's a palatial area or mansion that can be subdivided. There are different rooms that are about, or different buildings that go around it that are joined to it. The basic idea I think everybody gets, which is that the Bira is the totality of whatever is here. The Batim are these smaller areas or rooms that are around it. So what happened is the individual sold him one of those smaller areas, one of those subsets of either the Palterin or the way that the Rishbam is describing, one of those houses that surround the Bira. But now when he puts it in the contract, he has to delineate where he is selling him it. So when he does that, he says, so-and-so lives to the east, so-and-so lives to the west, so-and-so to the north, and the road is on the south side. So when he delineates the borders, he gives the borders of the entire property. That is because the subsets or the subsections of the property, you can't delineate. So here, when you delineate the borders, you have to ask the question, why is he delineating this space? Is he delineating this space just to give you a location to know where it is? Not the exact part of what he's selling to you, but to describe where it is. The only way to describe where it is to give you the bordering properties that are on the outside. Even though that's much bigger than what you're selling him, you're just giving them a way to delineate the location, right? A frame of reference as to where it is located. On the other hand, it could be that you're delineating the borders because you're telling him the space that is being sold. So what Rav Nachman says in these situations, when you have a mocher bayit lechaveiro, person who sells a house to his friend, inside of a Bira Gdola, and yet he delineates the outer perimeter of the whole Bira. He gives you the outer borders of the bordering properties that are around it, makes it sound like you sold him the whole thing. He says that's not the case. He's selling you the house. Why did he make the borders bigger? Because that's the only way to give you a frame of reference or a location to where it is. That little bayit does not have its own address, let's say it that way. The larger house has an address. So he's giving you the address of the larger house, not of the particular part that he's selling you. That's what the Gemara is saying is the Chiddush in our Mishnah. The Chiddush in the Mishnah, he sold them the house, but in delineating the house, he delineated the whole property. So now the Chiddush is, of course, included in those perimeters or those boundaries. So did you sell the Chiddush? The Mishnah says, no, you did not sell the Chiddush, like what Rav Nachman says over here, that the delineating of the borders is just to give you the address, the location. It's not telling you what I am selling you. Now the Gemara wants to understand, Eichi Dami. Rav Nachman's case, what exactly did he put in the contract that there is this uncertainty about it? If these terms are defined terms, which is, a bayit is a smaller location or smaller house, the bira is the larger location, then pshita, bayit zavinle. The contract says I sold you a house, then there's no question I sold you a house and not a bira. Bira lo zavinle. And of course, he did not sell him the larger area, the bira. So then the outer borders are, of course, what Rav Nachman says. They're just giving you the address. They're not giving you the size or the part that he sold you because it's clear he used the word bayit. Ella, if to the bira nami karula bayit, if you say the word bayit is used to mean both a bayit, meaning a smaller area, or a bira, a larger area, and that can be true, right? You can sell a house, can be sold even if it's a semi-detached house, or a house can be sold even if it's a totality of a freestanding building. So sometimes the word house can mean multiple things to different people or different contexts. So over here, when he uses the word bayit, especially the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it, does bayit mean the whole house, mean the entire mansion or estate that is there? Or does the house mean one of the subdivisions, one of the locations that you live on? Like for instance, you have many estates, they have a carriage house that's there as well. So what is included when you sell the house? Does the carriage house go on, or does it seem to be a totally separate house? So you still, you use the word house. In the old days, that word house would have included the house and the carriage house. Today, they made the carriage house into a separate building or separate house, and they call that a house too. So the word house can have different meanings. So the same thing over here. The word house, does it also mean bira and also mean bayit? Or there are those who want to say that does the word bayit mean bira, period, and therefore does not mean bayit? In that case, the Gemara says, then clearly he sold him the whole thing. Because either if the word bayit is used to describe the whole thing, and he delineated the outer boundaries, therefore it's clear that he's selling him the whole area. Or if you say that the word bayit is only used to describe a bira and not a bayit, then of course the using of the lashon bayit means he sold him the bira. Lo tzricha deruba karile the bayit, bayit or the bira bira. Most people call a house and a bira a bira. I mean that the terms are separate and distinct. Ve'ikanami de la bira karile bayit. But some people use the terminology bayit to describe a bira. Ma de tema kulu yizavin lei. What we'd suggest over here is that he sold him the whole thing. Even though the majority of people call bayit bayit and bira bira, over here you have additional evidence to support the fact that they're calling the bira bayit because he delineated the outer borders. Since he delineated the larger space, then maybe that's the way we should interpret the word bayit over here, not bayit being the smaller space, but bayit being the entirety of the structure that is here. Kamash malon. Here we learn, midavale the michtav, since you should have incorporated in the contract, Velo shairit bizvine ilain kadamai klum. I did not leave anything over, any residual in the sale for myself, since he should have written that in the contract. Velo katov, and he didn't write that. Shmamina shure shier. It's clear here that he left over additional items for himself. What Rav Nachman is saying over here is that there's a very specific template language that needs to get into the contract. And that is that in the contract you need to have a language that says, I leave nothing over for myself. If you put that language in, everything goes as a complete sale. You leave that out, then there are residuals in the sale. And that's what's indicative over here, which is that he sold him with the outer boundaries, but he left out this language. Leaving out that language indicates that the outer boundaries that he's delineating are just giving you a location or an address, not the borders of what he is selling you. And so therefore, you only get the small bayit, you don't get the entire bira. On the other hand, if that language was included, then we would have assumed that the outer boundaries are telling you what is being sold here. Everything within these boundaries is being sold, not left out. Rashbam and the Baal Tosafot raise your question. Why don't we just look at the money? Look at the cost. It's very clear there's a big difference between a bayit and a bira. If a bira, like the Rashbam says, includes 15 houses, then the price of one house versus the bira is going to be significantly different, and you should have been able to see through the pricing what it is. And so here the Rashbam answers, but damim modim leka lemeimar. You cannot say that the money or the price indicates da inuna lekarkaot. There is no such thing as ona'a lekarkaot. This goes back to Baba Metzia. Baba Metzia, we said that ona'a means to undercharge or overcharge by whatever amount. Let's use a sixth as the threshold. That is true by metaltalin. It's not true by karka. Karka, whatever price is paid, there is no ona'a associated with karka, not if it's overpaid or underpaid. There is no ona'a the karka. The Baal Tosafot take issue with that. Many Rishonim take issue with this, that the Rashbam says, and they say that it's just not true. Ain ona'a the karka is a gzera takatuf. The Torah tells us that karkaot are not included under the term ona'a, because not only is karka not included, neither is a shtar, nor is an evet. Karkaot, shtarot, and abadim are all excluded from ona'a. So you can't claim it has to do with the pricing of property, that pricing of property is all subjective, because it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the fact that the gzerat ha-katuv is that these three items are left out of ona'a. So therefore the Baal Tosafot give another answer. I'm assuming this is what the Rashbam meant. When he said ein ona'a l'karkaot, I think this is what he meant, but the Tosafot is saying technically he's just wrong about using that as the proof, which is that property is all subjective. That's what the Baal Tosafot answer, which is, it's all about your interaction with the property. Location, whether you want to be in this particular location, you own a house adjacent to it, there are many factors that will cause you to pay a different price than another party. And therefore, the market price is not really set. It really is very subjective and not objective. There might be some objective level that's close by, but the subjectivity can pull it off of that price because people are desperate, they want to live near their children. Whatever the reasons are that a person would pay more for a specific location, the price itself cannot be determined simply by saying, oh, this is the price, therefore we know what he bought. So that's the way the Baal Tosafot explained it. What you're noting is interesting is how much can you skew away from the original price. Maybe there's a certain price where you would say, oh my gosh, it's got to be different. Although, in Onala Karkot, the Baal Tosafot all over Shas say, in Onala Karkot has a limit to it. That's only 50% of a discount or 200%, meaning it's double the price or 50% of the price. That is the limit. So that would be within a realm of reasonability of skew for different subjectivity. According to Rashi, who says that ain't on alakarko, period, That is much harder to say then, because you could have any span of pricing. And I'm assuming that the pricing is within a range of reasonability for subjectivity, and that's why we can't tell through the money what's happening. The Rashbam quotes, Eino Nala Karkaot. The Baalei Tosafot are bothered by that. So they offer the alternative. It's not about the Onala Karkaot, which is Gzeirat the Ketubah, but just about the subjectivity of purchasing property, which I think is what the Rashbam is pointing out. He thinks the reason there isn't Eino Nala Karkaot, even though it's Gzeirat the Ketubah, is because there's so much subjectivity to these items. And I could think you could argue the same thing by Avadim and Shtarot. That Avadim and Shtarot also have a certain amount of subjective value because they aren't objects. Since they aren't objects, they have different values to different people based on their collection rights, based on the relationship with the individual, based on what they need in terms of an evid or help. So by a shtar has a certain face value to it based on what you can collect from it. A bond has a face value. Different people will pay different prices for a bond even though there's a face value for it, on based on whether they think there is an ability to collect on it, based on what the interest rate is in the bond. So too over here, a shtar can give you rights or rights of collection, but depending on the risk that's involved, different people will pay different amounts for that, and there could be big skews between them. All of these things impact on the pricing subjectivity of these items. The Baalei Tosafot do offer another alternative, which is that it's a machloket later on in the Masechta as to whether you do say damim modim or dat modim. Rabbi Yehuda says yes, the Chachamim say no, and what he suggests over here is hacha kirabanan. The Gemara here is like the Rabbanu who say that damim ain't modim. We don't look at the price. And so therefore, it's following that position, and then you'd avoid the whole problem, which is that we don't look at money at all, we don't look at price at all, according to the Chachamim. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avua, Hamucher Sadeh L'Chaveiro, someone who sells a field to his friend, Bibik'a Gedola, in a large tract of lands, Afopi Shemitzar Lo Mitzarim Achitzonim, even though he delineated the outer borders of the Bika, Mitzarim Erchiblo. Rav Nachman here says the same thing by a field as he says by the house. The field is even a bigger problem. We'll see that later in the Gemara, which is, how do you delineate where the field is in a big area? It's easy to tell who your neighbors are. You can say, hey, this person owns the whole Bika, and he's selling you one subtract within the whole Bika. How do you identify it? Well, you're going to identify the Bika because you have a neighbor on the east, west, north, and south. So you can delineate the larger Bika. To delineate that exact property, much harder to do that because it could be and totally internal to the Bika. And therefore, the owner around it is the same owner all the way around. It won't give you any information. So what he does is, for give you the address or location, he delineates by its outer borders. And here again, Rav Nachman saying he's giving you an address. He's not telling you the borders or the dimensions of the property that he is selling to you. In both cases here, the Rashbam notes, both when Rav Nachman says a mocher to bayit, and when he says a mocher to sadeh, he says, komod shayom meid bechad mi batei abira. The person standing inside one of the houses, and he says the same thing over here. He's standing in one of the fields. I think the Rashbam's doing that because that makes it even more clear that you're only selling one of the houses, or you're only selling one of the sadot, because you're standing on that particular property, or you're standing in that particular house. The Rashbam adds that in. That's not found here in the Gemara. I think that you could argue on the Rashbam and say that it doesn't have to be that way necessarily. I think the Rashbam does it because then it gives additional evidence to the fact that you're only selling him the house or the field and not the entire Bira or the entire Bik'a. So now he says, Hey Chidomi, what's the case here? The same thing that we had before. If these terms are clear, that Sadeh means a field, the Bik'a means the whole area, Pshitas Sadeh Zavinle. The contract says a Sadeh, then he sold him a Sadeh, not a Bik'a. Bik'a lo Zavinle, and therefore he didn't sell him a Bik'a. Velo the Bik'a, nami karele Sadeh. If they also call a Bik'a a Sadeh, then again, whether that means exclusively they call it Bika Sadeh, or they also call the Bika Sadeh, Kula Zavinle. Then together with the fact that he delineated the outer borders, and the Bika is also called the Sadeh, then that makes sense that he sold him the whole tract, the whole Bika. Lo Tzvicha, the Ika de la Sadeh, Karule Sadeh, Lu Bika Bika. There are people who call a field and a Bika Bika. Over here it leaves out the word Ruba. So that's interesting. You can see above that the Marshal changed the Girsa from Rove to Deika to match over here. That it's not necessarily the Rove, it's just that there are and are. It's an equal percentage of people, or it's close enough that people would use both types of terminologies. Bikanami to the Bika Karilo Sadeh. And some people also call the Bika a Sadeh. So Maudate Makula Zabinle, I would have thought since he delineated the outer borders, then we will fall towards those that call the Bika Sadeh and say, he sold them the whole area. Kamash Malon. That's why I added the word Kadamai before. The Bach adds it in as well, because here the word Kadamai is there. because I didn't leave anything over for me in this property. Since that language is not found in the contract. There means he clearly is leaving over a residual for himself. He's not selling you the entirety of this area. He's only selling you a portion of the area that is found in there. The tzricha, obvious question is, why do you need Rav Nachman to bring you the din both times, both about the bayit and the sadeh? Dish rein and bayit mishum dahatash mishta lechud vahatash mishta lechud. By the bayit, the birah and the bayit have totally different utilities. Right? The birah, if you call like the Rashbam says, like it's a common area between all the houses, it's not a living space. It's an area that's used or shared by the houses together. Equivalent to what like you said before, a courtyard, but a covered courtyard or something that's joined area to them. Totally different type of structure. Every field in the Bigad does the same thing. They're all fields. You can plow all the fields together. You can plant them all together. There's nothing that distinguishes one field from the other. I mean, obviously there are things that distinguish, but generally, fields are fields. Therefore, I would have leaned towards saying over there, he definitely sold them the whole Bigad. If you only told me about the case of Bigad, there is no other way to give you the dimensions because there is no natural address or border or delineating part to the field. The field is just open space. Whatever types of tracks that you create within the field are all artificial. On the other hand, by a house, the house has walls. So you could describe it by its dimensions, you could describe it by its location within the property, meaning that there are ways to, because of its delineation of walls, you would think there that you have a higher obligation to do it. And if you don't do it, then you're selling the whole area. Since he should have delineated that specifically and not the whole area, Zabinle, he sold him the whole thing. Tzricha, that's why we need both of them. Okay, Kamana Azla, Hadab, Rav Murray brought the Bat Shmuel. Who does this statement of Rav Murray, the son of the daughter of Shmuel? Gemara speaks about this in a number of places, which is that Shmuel's daughters were taken into captivity. They ended up marrying their captors while they were not Jewish. And therefore, the yichus of the grandchildren were up to Shmuel and not through his father. Isur Giura, who was his father, was not Jewish when he was conceived. He converted before he was born. But therefore, his lineage comes to his mother and not through his father. And that's why it's Rav Murray, the son of the daughter of Shmuel. Mishmeda Abaye. Hai man de mizavne le mide de chavre. Person who sells objects to his friends. Tzarech de michtab le. He must say in the contract. Lo shere bizvine elein kademai kum. I'm not leaving anything out of this contract or out of this sale. Come on. Who's this like? Rav Nachman, Amar Baravua. That's like Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says that language is pivotal in determining what you are selling. If you include the language, then everything goes with the sale, especially if you delineate the outer borders. If you leave that language out, that's a clear indication that you're trying to leave a residual or something left over in this sale. Ha'od amale lechavrei. So now here we go on to, again, terminology that's used. What's the meaning of the terminology? So someone who says to his friend, Ara debechia mizavanana lach, I'm selling you the areas or the tracts of land of Bechia. He had two properties that were known by that name. So he sells them the property of Bechia. The only problem is he has two properties that are called the property of Bechia. Amaravashi, chada amarle, tarte lo amarle. He said one, he didn't say two. He used the singular, he did not use the plural. So that means he meant one of the two properties, not both of the properties. And since the yad of the mocher is ala eluyuna, or the yad of the lokeach is on the tachtona, the burden of the proof is on the buyer to show what he bought. Therefore, they will get the lesser of the two properties, or the smaller of the two properties, unless he can prove otherwise, but he will only get one of those two properties. Vi amarle arata stamo. If he just used the terminology arata, or the Bach takes out the word stama, but he used the word arata de bechia, the properties of bechia, then miot arata shtayim. The minimum of land would be two. So this is interesting because as the Baal Tosafot raised over here, we found in the Gemara in Boba Metzia that if a person borrows like a hoe to work in the field, and he says to them, I'm going to use that bepar de sai, I'm going to use that in my orchards, that he can use it in all of his orchards. We don't say the minimum of a plurality is two, and therefore you get only to use it in two of your orchards, but you can use it in all of your orchards, because once you use the plural, we assume it means everything. Right. So why over here, when you use the word arata, which is a plurality, why are we saying the plurality is limited to two, and doesn't mean just every field or everything that's associated with this name? Right. So the Baal Yitzhak will bring two reasons. He says, That the one reason is because it depends on who's muhzak over here. Over here, the person that is muhzak is the person owning the property, selling the property. Mm-hmm. So he gets the upper hand, and we're going to interpret it to be in the least amount, which is two. On the other hand, in there, who has the person who has the hoe in his hand is the borrower. So since he's the muhzak in the item, he gets to determine what it is, and he'll give the most expansive view. Whoever's muhzak over there gets to determine the meaning. So here it's the seller that's muhzak, therefore it's the minimal meaning. Over there it's the borrower who has it in his possession, therefore he's going to use the most expansive meaning. So the Baal HaTosfot reject that because they say that's not true. When it comes to borrowing items, the original owner is really the muhzak. It's not the borrower, but the lender that is the muhzak, and therefore this distinction that you make is wrong. And he says, don't make a distinction between karka and mitaltalin, because that's another way you could distinguish. Over here, we're talking about property. Over there, we're talking about a hoe that was borrowed to use, and maybe mitaltalim are different. He rejects that answer, and he says, v'rivam michalek ben pardesai la'arata. In the end, the Rivam says that the difference has to be between the word arata and pardesai. V'hochanami, im amar mikarka ai have amar kol akarka shelo. It has to do with the word that you used. If he used the word in plurality, which is pardesai, or karka'ai, everybody would have agreed that means all of your properties, or means all of your orchards. Over here he used the word arata. That particular terminology versus or contrasted with using the word karka'ai, that means two properties and not more than that. So terminology of plurality doesn't mean everything, but means a limited number, and that limited number is going to be two. And that's why the Rivam distinguishes between here and the Gemara in Baba Metzia. So now, Iyamarle kol arato, if he says all of the property, kol arato ditle barmi bustanei upardese, then when he sells all of his properties, now he's adding in the word kol. Arato means minimum of two. Kol arato now overcomes that problem and says everything. I'm selling all my properties. All my property means all fields, except with the exception of bustanei are the orchards, upardese are the vineyards. So it accepts orchards and vineyards for that because they're considered to be separate or distinct. They don't go along with the word arata, like a field or a sadeh. They are known as a separate entity. They're known as orchards or vineyards, and therefore they're not included in the sale. V'yamarle ziara. If he says the word ziara, afilo bebustane upardese, then everything is included. As the Rabbeinu Gershom interprets over here, that ziara is kol nachalot sheyeshli, any property possessions that I have. Whereas the Rashbam interprets it as kol akarkot kriyim kain. All lands or all properties are called this zihara. That's the terminology that's used. Others say that the word zihara means land that is worked. So all of those come to mean a similar thing, which is then included in that is the fields, the orchards, the vineyards, the barmi bate, the abde. But excluded from that are your houses and your slaves. So when you say zira, zira means all of my lands, in a sense. All lands that I own. Lands means not only lands that are for plowing, but also lands that include vineyards, orchards, any type of property that I own, that would be sold to you, as opposed to arata, which is specifically like fields or lands that don't have a distinct name, like an orchard or a vineyard. But, I amarle nichsai, if he says, all of my possessions, afilu bate ve'avde, then even houses and the abadim would be included over there. What the Rishbam points out is, but metaltalim not. Your non-real property would not be included. Nichsai means all real property, not metaltalim. Even though we find in other places, as the Baal HaTosfot point out, that when you say kol nichsai meploni, all my possessions go to so-and-so, that it includes the metaltalim. So the Baal HaTosfot say that it's not because of the word kol over there that makes the difference. Rather, you can see in the Baal HaTosafot, he mentions that the word nichsayai over there is spelled with two yuds, and over here it's spelled with one yud. And so therefore, the word nichsai over here means all of my real property. The word over there means nichsayai is all of my possessions, not just my real property, but everything, and that's the distinction between the words. Although other Rishonim say that the word kol is the distinguishing factor here, and not the word nichsai or nichsayai. In addition to differentiating between nichsai or nichsayai or nichsei and nichsai, the Baal HaTosafot also bring a possibility that the distinction between here and there is that this is a mecher, this is a sale, and there it's a matana. And since by a matana a person gifts be'ayin yafa, so there he's giving everything, whereas by mecher a person doesn't do it in such a generous manner, and that's why it's limited in the scope of what he's giving. What the Gemara is laying out here is terminology. Again, this is the purpose or the idea in these prakim is to understand when people use terminology, what do they mean by that terminology? So the Mishnah is laying it out. Here the Gemara laid out certain terms, what you should expect when these terms are used in a contract, what is being sold under these terms. And again, we're going to stop here, top line of Samach Bet Amud Aleph. The Gemara tomorrow is going to discuss what happens if he delineates borders that are not equal. How do you then join the borders if he gives you one border that's long, one that's short? All of these are language that's used. What do people mean when they use these types of languages or when they use these types of expressions? How do we interpret those expressions?